morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series. I think this might be the first ever Thursday one. We're flipping some things around. Tony's got his season starting here. So you heard the coaching staff on Monday, and we are coming back with interview number 252 this Thursday here with Scott Klein, the head girls basketball coach at Lincoln Christian High School here in Lincoln, Nebraska, just down the road from where I live, about an hour or so. Before we get to Coach Klein, we, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple. Coaches, if your athletes are struggling with balance or spinal issues, give Dr. Kevin, Dr. Heidi a holler. Check out their practice, Cosac Chiro, that's KOSAKCHIRO.com, or give them a call, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, wherever, download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars so we can get the momentum out, raise awareness. If coaches look up a coaching basketball podcast, a pen and a napkin kind of jumps up to the top of the mountain, top of the heap here. Hopefully we keep moving up there. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. A lot of different things going on here. apenandanapkin.com. Go check that out. We got some other things in the works here. Other stuff coming up. But for now, for this evening right here, right now, we are here to talk to and about Mr. Scott Klein of Lincoln Christian High School here. Coach Klein, how are you doing this fine evening?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Marty. Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. Well, excited to have you on here. You're just getting done with your coaches meeting right before we got on here, and just getting ready for the first week of practice.
Yeah, we did. We had our meeting before the season gets going. All the coaches, we were together and just discussing what do we want to get accomplished kind of that first week, first few days of practice, what we want to focus on, and kind of like put the pen to paper and write down a few ideas and how we want to structure it. And we got some good ideas, and we're raring and ready to go come Monday afternoon.
Got the whole season figured out. Not going to miss a shot all year. Not going to give up any baskets.
Yeah. I don't know if we came to that conclusion, but we're going to try our best this year, Marty. That's for sure.
Well, you've got a good foundation to start with, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But Scott, for folks that don't know a whole lot about you, we'll start this in the usual way that we go with this here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and how you ended up at Lincoln Christian.
Yeah. Thanks. So when I got out of college, I was actually a teacher and girls basketball coach and coach football down in Tecumseh, which now Tecumseh is called Johnson County Central, consolidated with Nemaw Valley back in, what was that, 96, 97, like 99. So I was there 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then decided we had a couple good teams there. We were in the same sub-district as Malcolm. That's when Malcolm had a really good team back then. We couldn't beat them to advance. Elvin Murdoch was another one. That's when the Bornmeyer girl and the Novak girl played, and could never get out of there. But I decided that, my dad was a teacher. My uncle was a teacher. So I decided in college I was going to be a teacher. And I realized real quick that I didn't enjoy teaching. I love coaching, but I didn't enjoy teaching, so
you just couldn't handle the massive paychecks that were coming in on a monthly basis.
I don't even want to tell you what my yearly salary was back in 96, Marty. It's embarrassing. And so I got out, and I've been in pharmaceutical sales the last 25 years, and been able to then kind of coach on the side along that journey. I coached. My son's now a senior at Norris, so I coached his AAU team growing up. Me and another guy named Marcus Bosinger, his son's senior. Actually, Barrett just signed with Morningside yesterday. Mm-hmm. So we did that for a number of years. I had a couple good friends who coached Selman Murdoch, and my one good friend was the very first girls coach ever at Papio South. So volunteered, helped out there whenever I could when I was in Omaha working. And then I honestly never thought I'd get back into high school coaching. Mm-hmm. I just never thought it was in my cards, you know, because I was just coaching AAU and little kids and my son, and somehow continue that. And a friend of mine, Britt Ehlers, and now the girls coach at Crete, he called me up one day and he wanted me to meet, and he asked me to be his JV coach. At least he was the head coach of Wing Christian. And I initially turned him down because my son was a freshman and I didn't know what team my son would be on at Norris. And then he came back to me, and it worked out that I missed a few varsity games that year to go watch my son's game, but I was there for all the practices and most of the JV, all the JV games that year coaching. And then Britt decided to leave. And next thing I know, they offered me to be the head coach. So this will be my third year at Lincoln Christian in the head coach.
Mm-hmm. You know, where'd you go to high school? Where'd you go to college, coach?
So I went to high school Pawnee City.
Yep.
Down in the southeast part of the state.
Mm-hmm. Hanging out with Larry the Cable Guy.
I know Dan. Yep. Oh, okay. My dad taught Dan. So okay. Yeah. So yeah, so I know Dan quite well. And then I went to school at Westland.
Okay.
And I actually played football there for a few years at Westland, and then actually got into coaching my last year of football. I had gotten hurt and I couldn't play anymore, and I saw a posting. This is back in the day, Marty, where the postings were on a board. There was no internet, you know, for job posting, and they needed a junior high football coach. And I went out and met Dan Novak, and he let me coach junior high football. Yep. And then they needed a boys JV basketball coach that same year. So I worked under Kevin Wingard.
Gotcha.
For 1 year.
Okay.
And so that's how I kind of got back into high school basketball. And like I said, we got through college and then went to Tecumseh.
Yep. You had mentioned your high school basketball coach, Gary Bender, down there at Pawnee City. He had a big influence on you, your career, what you decided to do with your life. You know, just talk about Coach Bender a little bit and how influential he was.
Yeah, I still remember, you know, back when I was a senior in high school, you know, they say what everybody's projected, you know, the funny things, what you're going to be when you grow up. And everybody said I was going to be the teacher, basketball coach at Pawnee City. I was going to take over for Gary Bender.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, Gary, you know, he played at Peru State. He actually still helps. He retired a number of years ago, but he still helps coach the girls at Humphrey St. Francis.
Okay.
Which I don't think Humphrey is the first year that they're not Humphrey St. Francis anymore.
Brian Rick Richmuth. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, Gary just, I don't know, just, you know, you always, when you're in high school, he was just that influential person. Just, you know, I loved, he played college basketball, and, you know, we like to play up and down. And so he, you know, I see him at state tournament every year and get to talk to him. And so, yeah, I still have a pretty good relationship with Gary.
Mm-hmm. You're at two different places as a head coach now. Tecumseh, you were there for a few years. And then, you know, now you've been at Lincoln Christian. You know, and obviously there's been quite a bit of time in between the two jobs, but what's been kind of the differences? How much do you feel like you've grown in between the first job at Tecumseh and what you're doing at Christian now?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me, you grow is you just mature.
Uh-huh.
You know, as you get older, you know, I can remember back being the 25-year-old coach that seemed to yell a lot and go after officials all the time, and you know, now I'm pretty subdued on the sidelines. I don't say a whole lot, never have an argument with an official, may have a conversation. So I think that's the biggest thing, just maturity as you get older and things, you know, you learn like, okay, why did I act like that?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Why did I get a technical, mm-hmm. you know, when I was 25 and now 3 years, I never even got a warning type thing, you know,
yeah.
just age and maturity and, the game's changed a lot in the last 25 years. You know, the kids are just way more skilled and everything today because they just play basketball mm-hmm. more and more AAU. That really wasn't a big thing 25 years ago.
Yep.
You know, and it is today.
Yeah.
And working around that. So I think those things. I don't think the game of basketball's changed. Obviously, I always say Steph Curry's kind of changed the game of basketball, where it's become more of a 3-point game. The post game's maybe a little bit to the wayside a little bit. We're fortunate if we have a post player, so we tend to work inside out. But you know, the game's changed. Kids are more skilled. They're having basketball coaches on the side that they work with, their nutrition, they go to their trainers, and you know, they're just, you know, they're better athletes today than they were 25 years ago.
My nutrition regimen when I was a basketball player in high school was just to eat as much Pizza Ranch as I possibly could, and it didn't work out well for me. Let's just kindly leave it there.
It was funny. We went to a press day today. UNL had a press day. They brought 8 teams in from around the area. Just the UNL students.
Yep.
You go through interviews and stuff, and a couple of times, like, what's your pregame meal? What's your pregame? And, you know, they were saying their stuff. And I can remember mine is I went home and had a Tombstone pizza that we bought from Schwann and ate a Tombstone pizza and went and played basketball.
Yeah.
My pregame meal.
my thing used to be what my wife, and part of this was, again, we were on that whopping teacher salary, but I would have the Totino's party pizza, you know, the rectangular ones there. They cost like $1.50 a piece. And my post game ritual for years and years and years was come home, talk to my wife a little bit, pop the pizza in the oven. But when the pizza was done cooking, okay, I love you, I'll see you in the morning. I take it out, eat the pizza, and rewatch the film and take a bunch of notes and get ready for practice the next day, you know. So
that's another thing that's changed in 25 years is Hall.
Yeah.
That's a game changer. Back when I was a head coach in 97, the best way, you know, the two ways I started is the next morning I usually called the coach. Or if he didn't have a game, I drove over to Sterling over to Johnson to watch the team play.
Yeah,
that's how we scouted.
Yep.
And now I can click 2 buttons and I can have the opponent game in 2 minutes.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a completely different world. So,
yes.
For folks that aren't familiar with Nebraska, you are in Lincoln, which is the second largest city in the state, of course, home of the University of Nebraska, and there's about 7 now public schools, I think I was right with that number, and obviously Lincoln Pius, a big Catholic school, you know, right on the border between Class A, Class B. You're a smaller school, private school, obviously religious affiliated, but you're small, so you're in Class C1, so you have probably what, about 50 to 65 kids per class depending on enrollment.
Yeah, I think between 60 and 70.
Okay. Yep. Yep. So you're in this city of 250,000 to 275,000 people, but you're at a small town high school, the equivalent of, you know.
Yep.
So there's some advantages to that, Scott. There's also some disadvantages to that. You know, what's that been like being in a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the advantages is that the kids walk down the halls and everybody knows everybody. All the teachers, all the students, all the athletes know each other by first name, you know, because it is a smaller, I mean, it's big compared to what I went to. I mean, I graduated 24 people, Marty, so it's metropolitan compared to what I grew up with. That definitely advantages that the kids, I mean, most of them have been going to school together since kindergarten, first, second grade.
Yeah.
And it's just a very close, tight knit community in itself. You know, it's part of Lincoln, but it's a little different because of the community and the Christian aspect of the education that they offer at Lincoln Christian.
Yeah. Are there any disadvantages to it?
You know, I don't think there's any disadvantage to it. I mean, like I said, the ones that come out for basketball, they want to be out for basketball. But I think the most important thing is, and that's what it's really what I've really enjoyed over the 4 years is my faith has really grown being a Lincoln Christian. You know, I've always been a believer, but you know, now you talk about it every single day and you know, the girls, they learn that they're, their identities not playing basketball. You know, their identities in Christ. And so that's cool to see that, you know, that hopefully we say that's everybody's end goal, is to go to heaven. I don't know any different right now, you know, just because I've been there 4 years. I haven't coached in high school besides that when I was at a public school. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is just the close-knit community and the faith-based education.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically $1 an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So, subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, you come into a situation and, you know, you come into a program that you were assistant coach for a couple years, but it's a program that has expectations. It's a program, especially in girls basketball, is consistently at the very least competing for state tournament spots, if not playing in the first or second weekend in March each year. You know, what was that like going through the interview process and knowing that, you know, it can be a bit of a blessing? And a lot of people look at the blessings, hey, you've got a talent, you've got this, you've got tradition, but there's also a bit of a burden that goes with that as well, with those expectations, you know. So you know, take us through the process of taking over a program that has those high expectations, and how did you kind of prepare yourself, prepare your family, you know how did you get ready to take over the job?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, I remember when I interviewed, you know, I talk about that. You know, Lynn Christian's had a long story history that, you know, Coach Arduna, you know, had Lynn Christian basically state tournament every year, and they went through a little bit of a couple year dry spell. And, you know, I said that, you know, that we were alongside the road, and the bus wasn't broken down. We just got a flat tire. Mm-hmm. And it was, I took it as a challenge to fix that tire and to get it going back on the road again. And, you know, that 2 years ago, that first year, you know, it took a little bit with our seniors. You know, I don't want to say it took a little bit for them to buy in, but just to believe that they can accomplish what they could accomplish, because I knew what type of basketball players we had, and just getting them to believe that, to trust that, hey, we can be pretty good this year. You know, it's we're building this, but this isn't a 3-year build. Like the very first year, we can go to the state tournament. But it took a little bit of time for them to actually believe that. Then when you start winning a little bit, and then we win a couple games against ranked opponents, then they're like, oh, coach, he's onto something here. and then you see the confidence build in him. And, you know, we went to state that first year, you know, 2 years ago, got beat in the first round by Bridgeport, but it was a great basketball game. And, you know, the two sisters were just the one that went to Colorado. She just was a little bit too good for us that day. And I think we got beat by 3 points. But yeah, and I don't look at it as a challenge, you know, like, you know, yeah, you look at the win, you always want to look wins and losses, but, you know, that always doesn't, you know, even though we didn't win a state title 2 years ago, we had a very successful season. They got us back. I remember the first meeting I had with the seniors that year. I said, how do you want to leave this program? What, you know, your legacy, you know, and, you know, their goal was to get Lincoln Christian back on the map of C1 basketball. And to me, they accomplished it, even though we didn't win a state title and got beat first round. They still accomplished that by getting Lincoln Christian back on the map.
What do you feel like your strategy was, per se? I guess the strategy would be the right word, to get your kids back into believing that they could and should be back at that level. How did you sell that to the kids?
Well, I told them from day one that, you know, we got to learn to compete, and that starts in practice. We're going to compete every day. There's no guaranteed who's starting, who's doing this. Like, you got to show us in practice. Like, you're going to work hard, and we're going to compete. And we had a bunch of girls that year that, you know, that we could have easily went 10, 11 deep. I typically don't go that deep coaching wise, but it made practices really good because we had a bunch of girls that still could play. And so, you know, you had to earn it. You had to compete. And then, you know, winning, I don't want to say winning cures all, but, you know, once you get on a roll winning, you know, the light bulb kind of clicks. They're like, oh, okay. They start to understand a little more. They enjoy coming to practice more. You know, it's not an all-out four-month grind, you know, in that regards. And so I think that was number one, is just, you know, we're going to play hard. We're going to compete hard. We're going to compete on the defensive end, and get that mindset of that mentality. Mm-hmm. And once they fully trusted that, you know, as the season went on, you just thought switch. Mm-hmm. And they're like every close game, they thought they were going to win. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, maybe previous years they're like, oh, here we go again. This is going to happen. Or, you know, maybe can't wait for the season to get over with. But, you know, that changed, you know, come Jan. I think it was about January mm-hmm. of last year of stringing that all together.
Mm-hmm. Going into last year, you know, you felt like you obviously had been to the state tournament. You had a lot of these kids that were really, really young players. You know, so what was the transition there? Was it just, hey, we, you know, it's no longer about getting to the state tournament. I think we got a chance to win it. Or how'd you sell that?
Yeah, that was the next step. You know, like that 2 years ago, we started two sophomores, a junior, and two seniors. And then our first off the bench was a freshman who now is a junior. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, she was a starter. So basically, we had four starters back. Mm-hmm. And then the girl who came in as a fifth starter last year, she played a little bit as a freshman too on varsity. So I just, you know, I told them, like, okay, you guys got a taste of this. You know, when I had my spring meetings with them, you know, I usually wait about 2-3 weeks after the last game of the year to have the spring meetings, let everything settle. And I just said, what's your goal? Each one of them individually. I was like, what's your goal? And every single one of them is, we want to win a state title. Mm-hmm. We want to win a state title. And I said, okay, what are we going to do to win that? And, you know, they said, we got to work hard. We have a shot club in the summer. We set a number of how many shots we'd like to see them put up. You know, some make it, some don't. That's fine. You know, I did say, I think the number one thing that we have to get better at going into last year is we got to shoot the three better. I think 2 years ago, we were about 22% from the three-point line. And last year, all five starters were above 30%. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking they shot, you know, 3 of 10 on the season.
Sure.
they've taken a good number of shots. So they took that to heart. And I have a number of girls that, you know, what we do in the summer, they come to, but then they spend a lot of time on their own in the gym, and they all play AAU. They're getting the shots and getting better there. So I think that was it. And then they knew they're competitive. Like mm-hmm. these girls are super, I mean, they enjoyed getting their tiers good, but they hated that they lost.
Yeah.
And so they feel that fueled the fire going mm-hmm. into this last year's season.
Yeah. Let's talk about your state tournament run last year. You know, I don't want to say it wasn't a revenge tour, but a little bit of a revenge tour, you know, and you get matched up with North Bend, who was coming off. They had won four in a row, the Emmanuels just keep coming, let's just go through it game by game really quick. You know, you're playing this team. You're hoping to win a state championship. You want to win a state championship. Here's a team that's just been there, done that. Had to be a little bit of a mental challenge in a lot of ways. Even though they weren't as physically talented as they had been the last few years. So
yeah, and I looked at it too, Marty. Honestly, like, I thought, you know, I'd seen everybody play that if we played our best in C1, we were going to be really hard to beat. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, you know, what did you think about that first round matchup against North Bend? You know, we honestly didn't talk about them winning four in a row or anything like that. You know, my biggest concern was we had the 9 o'clock game. And mm-hmm. North Bend had done that a number of times. It's different when we get to the gym at 7 and we do a little shoot around, a walkthrough, and we got a 15-minute drive. And I remember reaching out to Coach Orduna. I was like, you know, you've done this. What advice can you give me, you know, so we can just be mentally ready to go at 9 a.m. And physically. And so that was, to me, was the most thing I was worried about. North Bend was... the last month of the season was playing just as well as they kind of took some losses early in the season, but then they got the one girl back from her injury after Christmas, January. Mm-hmm. It really helped them. But you know, just trying to slow down the Emmanuel girl, and the coach's daughter is a really good player there. Yep. And so we matched up well with them. You know, we have some girls who can actually defend and are pretty physical. You know, if they get in the paint, you know, we preach being physical with them, even if they get in the paint. I was more concerned. The concern, but not concern, is all those girls had played the year before, so they'd been in the Bob Devaney, except for the one girl. So I didn't think the different stage would be too hard on them.
Yeah,
it might have been the first year, different atmosphere. You know, of how it lays out and everything like that.
Sure.
But you know, we were pretty prepared, and the girls ran the game plan to a T. On, you know, build. I always said we said build a wall when Emmanuel gets the rebound, because she's going to go from one end to the next, and we got to get back. We worked on that hard in practice that week of building that wall, so she couldn't get to the paint. You know, we wanted to try and get her slowed down about the 15-foot line and not let her get another 4 or 5 feet deep in the paint. And they did a good job of that. You know, then we went a little run midway through the second quarter and built that lead, and mm-hmm. they made a run in the third to cut it to 6. And then, you know, we kind of just took over there towards the end of the third and fourth quarter to pull away. I think we won by 13 or 14.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you go to the semi and you're playing Bridgeport, the team that knocked you out the year before, you know, and obviously a much different team. Like you said, the one gal, you know, was at Colorado, you know, 6'3" Division I post player, pretty salty player there. So, you know, but it had to be sweet to end their season like the way they ended your season the year before.
Yeah, it was. I definitely think the girls, you know, I want to use the word revenge, but I think they were definitely looking forward to playing them mm-hmm. because we've gotten beat the year before. And it was a different matchup. You know, the two sisters are really good, but it's the 6'3", when you have a 6'3" post player who can do a turnaround jump shot on the block, I mean, how do you defend that? You know, mm-hmm. like it's, so they just didn't have that. And I mean, they had a girl that played the post, but just wasn't the level of Ruthie. But I think what I was most proud about is we locked in big time defensively. You know, it was a quick turnaround. We actually came back, played on that Thursday morning. We came back Thursday about 6 o'clock that night,
yep,
and had our scouting report. Went through about a 40 minute walkthrough of this is how we're going to defend it. This is who the matchups are. This is how we're going to switch. And, you know, if they run pick and roll, and they ran it to a T. And I think the most thing I was most proud of is I think they scored 32.
Yeah.
And somebody told me that was the lowest point total they had in 7 years.
Yeah, because they were running and gunning, scoring 70, 80 points regularly. Yeah.
You know, and we locked down, and you know, they just couldn't get anything. Now, they missed a few shots here and there, like most teams do, but they did. And, you know, we didn't get any second chance points, and we got out. And then, you know, we had a player go off that game.
Yeah.
You know, Matty Kasbaum went off for 28. Tied a career high, and Kenna got in foul trouble and had to sit. And that was one of the rare games that Kenna got her fourth foul with 3.5 to go in the third quarter. I think we had a 6-point lead. When the fourth quarter started, we had a 13-point lead.
Yeah.
And we were able to keep Kenna on the bench for another 3 minutes because we extended the lead.
Yep.
And we didn't have to risk or jeopardize losing one of our best players to pick up our fifth foul. So it was a great team effort. Like I said, Maddie went off, but Macy hit a couple shots, and Jessa played really well. And our one senior that graduated, Annie, hit a couple shots early in the game and really defended. She's guarded Olivia 2 years in a row now, and she scored 16. I scored 12 2 years ago, and I scored 16 last year.
Mm-hmm.
So she held her.
Far below her average.
10 point below her average.
Yep. And then the final. I found this. Whoa, sorry. Yeah, my watch is talking to me. Sorry about that, Scott. this is the high rent podcasting you get here from a pen and a napkin. you went up against my guy T. Shaw and the Sydney Red Raiders, and that had been one of your two regular season losses, and again, kind of a little measure of revenge.
Yeah, it was. I got to know him out at the Tony Showcase. Super nice guy.
Don't let him hear that. He's just gonna. It's just gonna. No, I'm just kidding. So
it wasn't the prettiest game. You know, it was a low scoring game. But I tell everybody, it's like, you know, when you play three games in 3 days, like to score 50, 60 points, it's tough.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard.
Kids are tired, and we weren't deep last year. We went to a sixth person. She probably played 12 minutes a game. Just gave us a little bit of a break. Kids here and there. So we weren't very deep. So I think you saw that. But one thing you really saw is, I mean, we held him to, 26 points, mm-hmm. I think. So we were locked in, really good defense. And we learned a lot from that first game we played them out Showcase. I think they beat us like 57 to 55 or something like that.
Yeah, close game.
It was a close game. Yeah, it was a close game. And we weren't very good on the defensive end that night. We didn't jump out hard enough on the dribble handoff, or, you know, if they ran a ball, we switching it, and they knocked down shots. And, you know, we really stressed that morning during our walkthrough is, you know, you got to get out hard on this. Like they didn't seem to drive the ball as hard the second time as they did the first time. And once again, I think that could be, you know, you're tired, you know, third game in 3 days. And you know, we were pretty fortunate. They missed some, you know. I have a philosophy is I'd rather give up a 19-footer than, you know, something in the paint. And so if somebody in Sydney, the first time I played it, I think that Losing is that her name, the track stud.
Mm-hmm.
She had 6 3-pointers against us because we didn't jump out hard enough on the triple drive handoff or the weave. And they really focused on that. And, you know, I think she only hit 1 3 that game. In the championship game, and so they once again stuck to the game plan. That's the nice thing about these girls is their basketball IQ is really high, and I can give them a game plan. And I mean, they study it inside and out, and they know every single, you know, out of bounds player that they run, you know, that we put on the scouting report, and so we don't give up any freebies. And so it wasn't the prettiest game, but in the state finals, I don't care if it's 1-0 or 100-99. You know, mm-hmm. we got the win, and
yep.
and it felt good to see them cut down those nets and the smiles on their faces.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're heading into this year. You are the defending champs. Like you said, you lost one starter, one senior. The core of your group is back. What's been the message the last few months heading into practice starting on Monday?
Yeah, you know, I've just talked to them about, you know, even today at that little press thing, you know, like, you know, we were at the top of the mountain in March, and, you know, once that is over with and starting now, we're at the bottom of the mountain just like everybody else. So how hard are you going to work this summer? Are you going to, you know, take it easy and, hey, we want it. We got to be back. We can win it again, because that's not what other teams are thinking. Everybody's now mentality is like you guys were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You were hungry. You got beat in the first round, and you guys were hungry to cut down the nets. And so you have to work maybe harder than you ever have. Mm-hmm. So you can defend that title. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing about these girls. They love being in the gym, and I thought they've had a great summer. Mm-hmm. They, as a coach, you always pray and go to bed every night that they stay healthy during volleyball season and everything, that everybody's coming in. And I think we're pretty healthy starting on Monday. We have one of our starters. She kind of sprained her ankle pretty good at the end of volleyball season. She didn't do anything these last 2 weeks in conditioning and open gym. But I think she'll be good to go on Monday to get back into it and start getting in shape. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, that's just been the message. Just everybody's at the same spot, you know, this time of year. And so now it's keep putting in the work, keep having fun with it, and just go play the game, because you guys are pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, Three Teams, One City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the three teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches, that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion, with these three teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person, or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. Coach, at this time, let's transition here. Let's jump into our John Wooden quote of the day. Wooden, a lifetime of observations. This one's really early in the book, Scott. Page 9 over to page 10 here. Coach Klein, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Sure.
All right, here we go. John Wooden quote of the day. Again, like page 9, page 10, Wooden, a lifetime of observations. The John Wooden quote of the day is, if we are not true to ourselves, we cannot be true to others, our spouse, our family, our profession, and colleagues. You must know who you are and be true to who you are if you are going to be who can and should become. You must have the courage to be true to yourself.
Like it.
Tell me why.
Well, I think as the girls, I think Christian, you know, When to be true to yourself, I think that's what is unique about Lynn Christian is they're true to their Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they do what they do. That's why they play basketball. They know that whatever happens in life, that Jesus will always wrap his arms around them and love them no matter what. Basketball doesn't define who they are, but Christ does. And so that's who they are. they're disciples of Christ, and that's what I love seeing about them is that right there. That's true to themselves. That's who they are. Mm-hmm. Is they serve they serve Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that we all have to do, you know, if we're going to be the best leader of our teams, of our programs, of our jobs, of our families, whatever it may be, you know, we have to know who we are. And sometimes that's a process, you know. Obviously, Scott, when we were younger, when our kids were younger, we were still trying to figure out how to be the best dad and husbands we could be. And heck, if we're doing the job right, we're still trying to do that today. You know, our kids are all in their 20s and we're, you know, right now we're trying to help them, do the best things for their, you know, to put them in the best situation that we can and help them and give them the best advice and all through and through. And I think that, but for us to really be, you know, authentic, if you're going to be an authentic basketball coach, if you want people to really, follow you you know, have your kids really buy into what you're saying. If you're not true to yourself, then they can't even be true to you because you're not being, you can't even lead yourself. If you can't lead yourself, how do you expect to lead others? That's something that sticks out with me there.
Yeah. That's why I think over the last 4 years, like I said, I'm a big believer, but my faith has just really grown. So hopefully the girls are modeling, you know, they're seeing my faith grow that as we get older, that we can still change and model the behavior that we want them to take on. And I hope they see that, you know, my number one priority in life is also Jesus Christ and, you know, then my family and then coaching basketball. Mm-hmm. I love being around them. And I think they see that now that they have somebody that cares deeply and I'll do anything for them. That's who I am as a person. You know, as I get older in my life, I feel like I want to do more in this world, with helping people. And you know, that's one thing I do with my profession. I take that seriously, and I hope the girls see that and recognize that in me too, that I am a true follower of Jesus and my family and being a leader for, you know, as many people as I can. And I also have people that I follow that, you know, that I look up to and want people to lead me. And so I couldn't agree more with what you're saying there.
Mm-hmm. Coach, let's jump into some X's and O's. Let's jump into some basketball. Let's get nerdy here. Let's get basketball nerdy here. Let's talk a little transition offense. You said you'd like to get up and down. You want your kids running the floor. Want to play an exciting brand of basketball. What are some of your philosophies when it comes to that? Do you have a numbered break when you're running? At the point when somebody else scores, what are you teaching your kids with that? What are you doing there at Lincoln Christian to get out and go here? And I'm going to kind of let you cook. I'll step aside if I've got a question. I'll try to ask as politely as I can, and we'll roll from there. So go ahead and talk to us here, Scott.
Yeah, you know, I used to be a big believer in, you know, kind of a numbering. We're going to run this break and run a secondary break. And 2 years ago when it first started, we work on it every day in practice. And I don't think we ever ran it once right in a game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, for some reason it's not registering with the kids and we're spending 15 minutes a day doing this. And I guess it's 15 minutes we could be spending on something else. So we don't have per se a numbered break. Our goal is we start four guards with our 6-1 post player. If one of our guards gets a rebound, they're bringing it heavy up the court as fast as they can. And our twos and threes are getting wide and running the floor. We're really athletic. If a post player gets the rebound, we have our designated point guard who's really good getting their outlet, and then our twos and threes are running the floor that way. So, transition wise, yeah, we want to, I'm a believer in, you know, one or two dribbles and advance the basketball from a point guard, or if our guard gets the rebound, and then seeing if we can create opportunities of a one-on-one or a two-on-one type break getting out in transition. Then what I found out too is when you get out and run like that, then a lot of teams, and I don't know how it is in A and B, but in C, then they typically don't have as many people going offensive glass. So you don't give up as many second chance points because the other team knows they have to get back because we're looking to break as quick as we can. You know, everybody says that with the shot clock coming into all classes, you know, we played with a few times last year in Class B and out to showcase and stuff, but I don't think the shot clock is ever going to be a factor for us because, like, the way how fast we want to play. And, you know, our goal is to, you know, get as many, 2-1 in terms of shot ratio. You know, we want to, you know, get up 65 shots a game to the other team's 30, 35, whatever it may be. So that's how we look at, you know, our transition offense. Like I said, it's not necessarily a numbered secondary break. It's just more who gets it, we're going to push it. Mm-hmm. Another nice thing too is our post players, she's pretty good with the basketball. So there's times that she'll take a couple dribbles and she can advance the ball up. I mean,
turn and burn herself.
One of the first buckets of the Sydney, the state championship game is she got the rebound, took two dribbles. Our point guard flew out of there. She threw a nice little pass from the volleyball line to the other volleyball line, got it in one dribble layup. So that's kind of how we want to get out in transition.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a constant reinforcement, you know, push it, get it out and go.
Push.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Correct.
And you know,
and I always liked the secondary break, Marty, but
yeah,
I was just telling you, we did it for 2 years, everything, and we never did it right.
Yeah.
Games. Like I couldn't figure out why are we not running, hitting the trailer, and then we go over and then we set a ball screen and somebody to go the wrong way. And we did it every day that year. And I'm just like, all right, we're wasting 15 minutes of practice time when, like, if we're not going to be able to run, and we'd run in practice, but we couldn't run in a game.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, I can work shell for 10 of those 15 minutes of practice instead of running a fast break.
I was just going to ask you, how did you fill those other 15 minutes?
Yeah. So there's a new general, like, we went with a lot more shooting in practice. You know, when I remember when I talked to the group, because when I told the girls, I think I said earlier, like, you know, we need to shoot the three better as a team. And you know, one of the things, like, they're like, I think we need to shoot more in practice, you know. And so then we incorporated you know, we have at least two you know, stations of 10 minutes each, at least, of different shooting drills we do. Some are, you know, maybe one's just a quick partner shooting of five spots, three shots, four shots each spot. And then some where we do getting the paint, kick out. We started implementing like a hammer, like driving the hammer pass along the baseline. And that really, I think, seemed to really help our shooting last year as well. So, yeah, so we kind of went away from working on fast break and practice. Now we really stress it when we do our live periods up and down, of pushing a basketball, and, you know, we'll blow the whistle of, you know, we didn't advance it quick enough type thing. If somebody's running out, we want to advance the basketball, during our live sessions of what we're doing in practice. But yeah, I mean, we can always fill in shell drill, you know, a little extra few minutes on shell or shooting, or whatever. Or maybe we do five more minutes of half court live instead of full court, you know?
Yeah.
Half court running.
Yeah. I would have been like, hey girls, you know, if you don't want to do this shell anymore, let's start running this in the games, you know, something like that. So
should have done that. Like, it was the darndest thing. Like, every single, I mean, we did it from day one till the, like, and we could do it in practice, but in the game, one person would go the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
And it was just every single time. And then, like, that's something, you know, we always evaluate as coaches and everything at the end of the year, like, what can we change for next year? What can we do? And I know that was one thing I said, is like, we're done trying to show the designated fast break because we can't run it in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So Why do we keep practicing this if we're not going to run the game? Let's just get out and we stress push. Advance the basketball. Advance the basketball.
Yep. What about your, you know, pressure defense? You want to get up. You want to attack the ball. Yep. You know, make a, you know, again, kind of the same thing. What are you doing there? What are you trying to get accomplished with that? How are you implementing that with your kids?
Yeah. So we, you know, last year was a little different than 2 years ago because we were last year, I mentioned, we weren't very deep.
Yeah.
So we didn't do a lot of full court stuff just because I was always worried how tired we were going to get, long season. You know, 2 years ago, we were basically full court, man-to-man, you know, little run jumps in there at times if we had certain calls. But, you know, my philosophy was let's just, you know, those three-pointers they were hitting in the first quarter, they're not going to fall in the fourth quarter because they're getting pressured the entire game. Last year we weren't as deep, so we did a little more half court diamond and the man. Mm-hmm. We're strictly 100% man in the half court. And now my third year there, we played one possession of zone the entire 3 year. We don't play zone. So I think this year we're going to be a little deeper, Marty. Uh-huh. A couple of freshmen that played a little bit last year now are sophomores. That I think we might be able to get 7-8 deep. So I think my philosophy is I think I want to go back to a little more full court pressure. That's one thing we were talking about the coach's meeting tonight is, you know, do we look at a little full court press zone wise and man wise along with our half court, you know, trapping defense as well. There's a lot of times we have calls where, we'll trap the first pass of man-to-man. Uh-huh. We really do that when we run against a team who likes to run that Nebraska. You know, the first pass, the big goes and sets the ball screen right away.
Yeah.
We'll have that. The point guard will safeguard. Our guards guard our point guard. She makes that pass. She usually Laker cuts the corner. And we'll just have that person go trap that first pass. And now it's 3-on-2 on that ball screen. Uh-huh. And it doesn't take them long that they're done running that.
Yeah.
Like they, especially in C1, mm-hmm. they haven't seen that thing, that type of defense. You know, we'll run out, we'll have a call where when the ball gets down past the free throw line, extended down to the baseline, we're the closest one, then we'll go trap that and we'll rotate off that. So we're always putting pressure on the basketball and looking to trap and get a steal or a turnover. Or I always tell the girls, even if somebody, you know, if we get a trap and all of a sudden she shoots a three-pointer and it's not a good shot, that to me it's a turnover, you know, because it was a bad shot in their offense. That coach probably didn't want him to take.
Yeah.
So it was successful. But we do shell drill every day in terms of on-ball pressure. We really work, you know, a shell when somebody drives it in the lane, because I tell them every day, you're going to get beat up with the basketball. You're going to get beat up with the dribble. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So how do you recover off that? How do you help off that? How do you rotate off that? How do you communicate off that? And I think the girls understand it. Like, I don't think there's probably a player out there that loves doing shell drill.
Yeah.
This isn't fun. But we make it fun. We make it competitive.
Yep.
And they saw it. You know, I told them last year, and, you know, probably first of the year, like, if we're going to, like, we can score the basketball. But I said, when it comes to the state tournament, the scoring tends to go down to the state tournament. You know, it could be nerves, playing so many games in so many days. But you're going to have to lock in on defense and get better. And they took that to heart and pride. And, you know, the last months of the season, you know, we played a Norris and a Beatrice and, you know, teams like that. They really locked in. And, you know, it's one thing nice about this group is when I challenge them, they like that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll step up to it.
Yeah. So you were unable to kind of do what you would like to do last year, but you found enough wrinkles with, you know, trapping the first pass and different things like that to pressure without getting out in the full court and pressuring and saving your legs and not picking up silly fouls far away from the basket and things like that.
Yep, sure did. And I'm still on the fence. You know, I've talked to a few coaches with the shot clock. It's, you know, like if we go to the full court press, you know, you'd hate to give up free layups. Somebody beats a press. And do we look to still stay in our half court press of some nature and just go back to our man? So I'm still on the fence of what's going to suit us best. So I think we could do both, but I'm trying to still decide what I think it's going to be one of those that we play it by ear. You know, if we're full court pressing and we're giving up too many layups, we may have to just go back to kind of what we did last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think right now my goal is to get up and harass the basketball. And when we pressure a basketball with full court, we're not necessarily looking to get full turnovers.
Sure. You
know, we have calls and we want to run and jump, or we've seen something on film that a girl drives hard this way and you can easily get her stopped and she picks up her dribble and it's an easy trap type things. But we just, you know, my philosophy is just a bunch of guards. Let's just turn them as many times as we can. And let's just try and get them as tired as we can. So, you know, come fourth quarter, those open looks from 19 feet may not hold as easy.
Yep.
And then when you have a couple players like ours that can drive on the offensive end, and we have a, you know, a third team superstar and a post player, in Kenna, we can, you know, you always worry about yourself getting tired. But when you have those type of players, you know, we can run certain plays and stuff like that to get a bucket when we need it. If we're as tired as well.
Yeah. It's always good to have players that make you look a heck of a lot smarter than you really are, Scott, right?
Yeah. It's not the X's and O's, Marty. It's the Jimmy's and Joe's, you know, that's, you know, saying like, we have a group of girls that can play the game of basketball. My job is to stay out of the way. I remember one thing I told my last year about my best friend on his assistant coach, and he'd been a longtime girls coach. He was head coach at Weeping Water, and he assisted at Elmwood Murdoch, and he was assistant at Papio South. And I, when we got to play North Bend, you know, I just walked up and I said, let's just get out of the way. Let's not try and overcoach this, because I think that tends to happen sometimes is coaches get in their own way and they overcoach. We got here with them. I always said, I feel mine, if you have a game on Friday, my job is Monday through Thursday to get them ready for Friday in terms of the way practice is structured. And then the stat report we put in the day or two before, how we're going to defend certain things. And if I've done that, then Friday, let them go play the game.
Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Let's talk about game day. You know, the aforementioned, before we got on the air, we were both saying we would love to go to practice for 365 days, and the players want to play games 365 days. So we will talk about the players and the game day and that type of stuff. Yeah. You know, Scott, what are some of your philosophies when it comes to your game day? You know, what are you doing during the JV game? How do you get your kids organized? What are you doing during your pregame talk? You know, just kind of that rhythm of things that you know, what you're doing to get your kids ready to roll.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we, you know, JV usually play before the varsity, so they play like at 4:30. So the varsity girls, I usually have them there, you know, the five or six are the starters and the first off the bench, they got to get there, about 4:10. And the nice thing about like a lot of schools is we got gym space. So, you know, I want them to get in a few shots. So they're usually, I'm with the JVs are warming up and stuff. So they're in the other gym, just getting some shots in. And so then they're required at 4:30 to come sit behind the bench and cheer on the JV girls and support them. And then usually at halftime, when the girls come out of the locker room, JV girls, the varsity girls go in, they do their thing for the third quarter. And then beginning of the fourth quarter is usually when I go in and we just have a quick little pregame talk. We quickly go over the matchups, who everybody's matching up with, their strong suits. We'll go over certain plays that they'll run, just refresh them, the blob or slob that we've seen that they make. We don't want to get a quick bucket on. Mm-hmm. Just a quick 5-minute highlight. Like I said, once again, I go back to what I said earlier. If I've done my job Monday through Thursday, it's just a quick, okay, Kenna, you got her, Maddie, you got her, Macy, you got her. You know, here's what we're doing. You know, Jessa, she's a point guard. You're gonna guard their point guard, but we're gonna guard her 94 feet today. We're just gonna, you know, make her work a little bit to bring the ball to court. Mm-hmm. That's the game plan for that game. And then we just finish with that up, and we say a prayer together, and then I've got it timed down pretty good that the game's getting over with, and as the JV girls are coming in, because we don't have very many out, so all the JV girls suit varsity. Mm-hmm. They throw their shirts on, and we go out, and we get a one.
Away we go, and away we go. Yeah. What about halftime?
Even if it's a road game, we always get to the gym early, and we always have them shoot before mm-hmm. every game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, it's a funny thing. You can run all those plays and move those X's and O's around all that you want, but if you don't put it in at the end of the all of that stuff, it doesn't matter. You got to have kids that can shoot it. So,
yep.
What about halftime? You know, how do you usually run your halftimes?
Yeah. So what is halftime? 10 minutes?
I think I
get back to me.
I think so.
So. Yeah, so we, usually when one of my assistant coaches, she keeps a little shot chart and keeps, I always like to know offensive, like how many offensive rebounds we've given up and turnovers we've had. And so, you know, usually as we're walking the locker room, it's a little bit of a longer walk. It takes a minute or so to get there. And so as coaches, as we're walking the locker room, I'm looking at the shot chart and then we'll stand outside for a couple minutes and like, okay, here's what we're seeing. Here, you guys seeing different? Okay, they're playing a 1-3-1. We're not doing a very good job of this. We're not finding the high post, whatever it may be. We'll have a quick conversation, then we'll go in and we'll talk to them for 4 or 5 minutes. And you know, if we make any changes in terms of maybe, like I said before, in a 1-3-1 or high post, or if something's killing us on the offensive end, we got to switch up defensively. You know, we switch a lot. I know that's one change we made at Bridgeport, the semifinal game is. We were switching everything and the point guard, the other sister kind of went off in that one quarter. And we were switching things and the girl was sitting on the ball screen. She was sitting about 21 feet from the hoop. And we're like, well, that's really doing us. Like, why are we switching that? So we just had her just go under that, you know, and we saw it on film, but until you saw it live, it's like, oh, they're sitting that thing a long way away from the hoop. Like she can go underneath that real quick and still get there. 20 feet, 18 feet stopper type thing. So we might make an adjustment or two that we're seeing and then just keep talking about, you know, I always preach to them that the first 3 minutes of the third quarter is almost like the most important 3 minutes of the game. You know, mm-hmm. if we're up 5 or 8, let's get that lead to 14, 15, you know, let's outperform by 10 in the third quarter. If it's a tight ball game, let's get that lead from 1 to 7 or 8. We always kind of set a goal.
Yep.
You know, one thing I know we started doing last year, one of my assistant coaches brought is how many defensive stops can we get in a row? And we counted them up and she marked and tallied it. And so that was a running thing. Like, okay, we had eight consecutive defensive stops. Okay. Our goal is have is 9.
Yeah.
You know, and they took that to heart and you could hear all the JV girls on the bench. That's 2. That's 3, you know, you could hear them telling the girls,
yep.
You know, and so it motivated them a little more, like, okay, let's get another stop.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's kind of what we do at halftime. And then, you know, come out second half. And once again, right before they take the floor, I say the same thing, you know, hey, we got a 5-point lead, you know, maybe we didn't play our best. Let's go out and let's have fun. Let's play our best right now. And let's try and get that lead to 10 by the end of the third quarter.
Yeah. Yep. How about let's finish it off here. The end of the night, you know, what's the usual MO for you in the locker room at the conclusion of the game?
Well, it was when if the win, they like to scream and yell and celebrate with me, and you know we just quickly recap the game, and then basically then my message is okay. What's you know, especially if a back to back game, you know, Friday Saturday is like okay, you know, like we're going to Hastings tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon, and you know, the bus was leaving at 11. We got shoot around at 10:30. I know most of you'll probably stick around and watch the boys varsity game, you know, stick around as soon as that's over, get home, get your rest, get your meal in, you know, the proper protein intake, your water intake. If you have any injuries, let's get in and see our trainer to get that taken care of. And then just say, hey, you know, great job, proud of you. And, you know, I try and make it as short as sweet as possible so they can get out there and see their parents and then also watch, you know, would be in a small school. You know, they want to watch the boys as quickly as possible, too.
Speaking of those parents, Scott, let's go home with this. You know, obviously, at any school, your communication with your parents, your the transparency that in one part you need to have, but in other cases, sometimes it gets complicated. How about we use that term?
Yeah.
But what are some of your philosophies when it comes to your communication with your parents, how you work with them? Obviously you need parents to be involved, but there's boundaries that also need to be set. You know, so how do you handle it there at Lincoln Christian?
Yeah. You know, I think that's one thing I've learned as I've grown older as a coach is, you know, I tell my, like we had our parents meeting on Tuesday night. You know, every Sunday afternoon, evening, I send out we use a team app that all parents and players are on, and I send out a weekly message of, okay, this is what the week looks like. Monday practice, Tuesday, you know, get over at 6, you know, and so forth, so on. We have our weekly devotion is on there because we do devotions every day or scripture. But then I let my parents know, you know, I am an open book. I love talking basketball. I'm not having any parent meetings about playing time. None, zero. I'm not having any meetings about other players playing. You know, why is this girl playing in front of my girl? Like, I'm just not, you know, that's something I've learned over the years. You can't open that door. And they're pretty good about that. They may not always agree with it. But, you know, we're not discussing playing time or who's starting or why is my daughter not starting. We're just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to respect the boundaries. You got to trust us that, you know, we know the game of basketball. We know how to coach it. And we've had some success along the way doing it. But, you know, you'll run into those situations where somebody wants to talk about something else, but it always ends up coming back to one thing. And you just got to be straight up like, yeah, I know why you want to talk about this, but now we're talking about this. We're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If that's all you want to talk about, you know, I had one last year.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, meeting's over. Like,
yeah.
We're not going to do that. You can't open that door. And it doesn't matter if you're the star player or if you're bottom. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of maybe the good of, you know, not being a teacher there. You know, I'm there 2 hours a day. I think the girls just want to come play basketball and, I don't know why everything is going on, you know, in terms of the school and stuff like that. It's good and bad of that. And I think the parents now, I think I've earned their trust and the respect that, you know, I'm open and I'm honest. And I'll have conversations all day long with your daughter about, okay, this is where you're at. This is why you're playing JV. This is why you're not ready to play varsity yet. Or other way around, you're sixth person and you're not starting. This is why. I'll have that conversation with your daughter all day long of the role. But I just won't have it with the parent.
Yeah.
And I think if you lay that groundwork, you have a chance of less issues that way, and you got to stick to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't open that door for anybody because then, you know, they'll see that, you know, well, so-and-so, I guess I heard come and talk to you and, you know, I want to take my turn and, you know, that's just not the way I do things. And, you know, and I think they respect it because I haven't had a lot of, I guess, parent issues over the couple of years, you know, in terms of that. I mean, you always have a few here and there, but you know, I think we handle them pretty well as a staff, and I'm always getting the staff involved if there's something we're dealing with, and, you know, and I listen to their advice and I listen to what they got to say, and then we just go from there.
Yeah. I, you know, you kind of brought that up, you know, there's the, what I call the code words, that they'll try and use to get that angle in there. And, it's a lot of times, I think you'll agree with this, Scott, it's a lot of times we feel like we're on such an island when it comes to those things, but it's more, everybody has some sort of issue, even when you're 25-2 and you're in line to win a state championship, you've got some stuff that you're dealing with. A lot of times they you know, people from the outside looking in go, gosh, that's it's got to be great to be Scott Klein. Look at all this, but there's still stuff. There's still stuff. Yep. You know,
there is. My dad was a coach forever, and he always, you know, his best advice he ever gave me is, you'll never make 100% of people happy.
Yeah.
You make 100% of people happy, you're doing something wrong.
Yep.
You know, that's just, and we have it. You know, we win a state championship, and we all still deal with stuff.
Yep.
You know, and you know, and I think that's one thing I've grown and I've learned too is, not everybody's there to win a state championship to play basketball. You know, that every player has different goals and things like that mm-hmm. with their basketball careers.
Yeah.
And that's where you, as a coach, you learn to build a relationship with each girl and figure out what kind of makes them tick and, you know, why are they doing this? And you know, every one of them has different personal basketball goals. And
yep.
it's my job to figure out what they are and then try and help them achieve those goals, whatever it may be.
Yep. My friend Greg White out of Arkansas, saw him last month at the USA basketball deal, and he had a great line. It's something I wish I would have had 25 years ago, and especially when I became a high school coach. He said, you have to learn how to win with players who just like basketball. It's easy to coach the kids that love basketball. It's easy to motivate those kids, but you're not going to have everybody on your team that loves basketball.
Sure.
And sometimes you might have teams that nobody on your team loves basketball. They like basketball. They enjoy playing, but they're not passionate about it. So how are you still going to figure out how to be successful, both in the sense of giving the kids a great experience and also you know, you want to win more than you want to lose. I mean, they're still keeping score, you know, especially at the varsity level. So how do you do that? And I think sometimes some of our frustrations as coaches come out when the players are not as passionate. We don't understand why they're not as passionate and it's all consuming as it is for us. And man, when Greg said that, I was like, oh, you know, nail, meat, hammer. You just hit that on the head, Greg, you know?
Yep. And I think that's where I go back to just trying to just build a relationship with every single player you have, from the freshman JV player to the all-star senior. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to, because everybody has different motivating factors of why they're playing the game of basketball, and try and tap into that. And then, like you said, and like he said, just you want to have a good experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy. You know, it's tough because I am passionate about basketball and I want to win every single game, but it's not everything for every single person, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
It would be easy if every single player on the floor just loved the game of basketball, but that's exactly right. Some are just out for basketball because they're friends with them.
Yep.
And they enjoy the camaraderie and they enjoy riding on the bus and eating food before, you know, on the bus rides and, you know, but you got to be able you got to build that relationship and understand what kind of makes them tick. Why are they playing the game of basketball? And what can I do to help them become better along the way?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and that's definitely a challenge. I mean, that's that's one good thing about only having 14 girls out is we're all practicing on the same floor together. You know, when you get up to 20 and you have a reserve team, I mean, I would love to have higher numbers right now, but we don't. And so it's a little easier to get to know everybody because we're all practicing together.
Mm-hmm.
And the JV plays the same night as the varsity. The reserve, you know, we 3 years ago, you know, there was 10 reserve games. They're playing on different nights, so we're kind of separate. Well, we don't have that last year and this year
mm-hmm.
Because of our small numbers.
Yep.
And so I've gotten to know the girls way better over the last 2 years because I'm with them every basically minute of practice. You know, there's no divided court. You know, when it's time to go half court live, you know, the reserve players going one end and the top 10 or 12 on the next end. And, you know, we don't have that luxury with having only 14 out. We're all together.
Yep.
And I feel that's one reason our JVs have been successful the last couple of years is because of that too, because they're practicing every day against our starters.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Well, Scott, it's a challenge that you have handled very well. You know, a heck of a 2 year start there, and wish you nothing but the best for this upcoming season. If folks want to know more about you, want to know about the Christian program, how are they going to find that out?
Yeah, I would love for them to come watch a game, watch us play. But you know, we can get on our Twitter page, LCS Basketball. Our school does a good job of their Facebook page, stuff like that. Just social media to get out and about. And if there's anybody in the Lincoln area, you know, and you're looking for something to do on a Friday night, we play a fun style of basketball, and I think it'd be a joy to watch our team play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Scott, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I hope you enjoyed your a pen and a napkin debut.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the invite. I always love talking basketball, and God bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. If you could hold the line here just a second. Again, Scott Klein, the girls basketball coach at Lincoln Christian High School. Want to thank him for his time. We, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all that fun stuff on the various platforms that you find this available. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Hope you've enjoyed episode number 252 with Scott Klein, head girls basketball coach at Lincoln Christian High School. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.